I'm going to comment about the shooting in South Carolina yesterday by Dylan Roof. I won't be going into other things and theories and explanations. So I'm going to ignore the people who say that this didn't happen or that it's just a bunch of actors. I'm going to take this thing as it is presented in the mass media with the information which we have now. I'm going to base it on the assumption that all this is correct. Whatever other evidence comes out later to the contrary is actually not relevant for what I'm about to say. I want to address what the claims are now and what those claims actually mean. In the first mass media photographs of Dylan Roof, they focused on two flags that were on his clothing. The one was the flag of South Africa when it was under apartheid, and the other flag was the Rhodesian flag. That country is now called Zimbabwe. So they made a whole lot about this. The mass media focused on those two flags, and then they started with the normal rhetoric, which was, he's a white racist, he's a supremacist, he looks to whites in Africa as being his heroes, he's a southerner, and all that sort of stuff. So they were coming with that racial angle, this is just another bad white racist. I am a Rhodesian. I was born in Rhodesia. I am a white male living in Africa. My family went to Rhodesia in 1947. They were Boers from South Africa. Half of my family lived in South Africa and the other half emigrated to Rhodesia. We lived in Rhodesia during the Rhodesian Bush War and we were there when it became a black country. I moved to South Africa and I lived through all the same things here in South Africa. So I do have a firm personal grasp of what happened in Rhodesia and South Africa. I was there. According to the mass media, information was leaked to them by people who were present when he confessed to the police. In his statement, he said something along the lines that he would give these black people something to pray about because these blacks are busy taking over his country. I cannot speak for Rhodesians, nor for Boers, nor any white people in South Africa. I am speaking for myself. What I'm about to tell you are my views. I know that everybody else, the Boers, the Rhodesians, they will all want to distance themselves from this because they had nothing to do with this. I used to be like those Rhodesians, those Boers, a God-fearing white who did not want to be seen supporting a white racist because it's so bad for race relations. We had a similar incident to this here in South Africa in the 1980s. There was a Boer called Barend Strydom. He ran amok in the streets of Pretoria one day, and he shot 20 blacks. Of the 20, about 12 died. He was put on trial and thrown in prison. Much later, when all the political prisoners were released, he was released as well. His actions were regarded as politically motivated. Because at the time, blacks were also busy killing whites. So this was seen as tit for tat. We're in a war. And this guy was just one of the guys on our side who ran amok and did his own thing. At the time that Barend Strydom did this shooting in Pretoria, I was outraged. I also thought, oh my God, this is such a bad thing. More recently, I was chatting to another friend who is politically quite well connected and who told me that from what she knew, Barend Strydom had actually been a police officer. He'd been a police officer who had gone to many crime scenes where whites had been murdered, and he'd seen what blacks had done to the whites they'd killed, and that it was his time as a policeman that made him get this tremendous hatred for black people. And that is what motivated him into his racial attack. Here in Africa, in Rhodesia, as well as apartheid South Africa, there were large numbers of whites, especially here in South Africa, there were large numbers of liberal whites. And these liberal whites used the same arguments and told the same sob stories that the liberals in America do today. In America today, you get people in the mass media continuously making excuses for black people. It's not black people making excuses for black people. Most of the time, it's white people who are making excuses for black people. They are making excuses for their behavior. Black people in Africa, in South Africa, became violent. And it was said that they became violent because they were oppressed, because they couldn't move upwards in life, because the system pushed down on them and there was no future for them. We were told that if we gave them these opportunities, they would be better people and then all this anger would go away. Those same arguments are actually being used in America today. Even though blacks in America have had all their civil rights since the 1960s, in 2015, liberals are still making excuses for black people. Liberals are making excuses for their failure, but these liberals, the mass media, the intellectuals, are also cheering these black people on when they are violent. They find all kinds of reasons why it's okay for blacks to be violent, why it's okay for blacks to fail. All these things are defended by the liberals. These same liberals do not use the same arguments when talking about white people. When they're talking about white people, then they talk in a totally different tone. When they talk about white people, then all of a sudden, the white is always wrong. He's always filled with hate. No black is filled with hate. When a black is busy burning something down, that's not hate. That's just free expression in a system in which he is oppressed. The black being 13% of the US population, he's a minority and he's oppressed. And he's allowed to do almost anything. And the liberals are cheering him on. So are the intellectuals, the academics. They sit there and they give you all the reasons why it's okay for a black to be violent, to kill, to steal, and to fail. Here in Africa, among the so-called racist whites, there were a number of liberals, especially in South Africa. There were lots of English-speaking liberals and Jewish liberals, and they were all making these same sorts of arguments as you hear in America. I have been listening to liberal arguments for much of my life. When I was younger, I actually took those kinds of arguments seriously. Now I just dismiss them altogether because I've seen how they panned out and I saw the end result. Not only were the conservatives completely correct, but the right-wingers, the real far-right wingers, weren't even right-wing enough. That is my view of what has happened. There are white people in America, in Europe, and Britain, who are afraid of a future in which white people are drowned by non-whites entering their countries. They've seen what the birth rates are like. They've seen how many come in. The statistics have been done. And it is clear that within 50 years, most of the countries in the world, which today have a majority white population, won't exist with a white majority. Now, in the 1970s, I recall hearing similar concerns coming from my parents and their friends. The concern was black rule. What would happen in the future if blacks ruled? And we knew, because we had friends who moved and traveled to other countries in Africa. A particular country that concerned us at the time was Zambia. If you look on a map of Africa, you'll see that Zambia borders on Zimbabwe. The concern was that Rhodesia would become like Zambia. But Zambia wasn't the only example. In fact, there were dozens of others. The whole negative trend started in Kenya, where there were lots of white farmers there who were doing very well. And they were murdered, and others fled, and others sold their land for nothing. Over a period of about 60 years, whites have been driven down through Africa from Kenya, which is north of the equator, all the way down to South Africa. 95% of all whites in Africa, perhaps an even higher percentage, live in South Africa now. And here in South Africa, you can meet whites who were in Mozambique, Angola, Rhodesia, Zambia, Kenya, Malawi. They've been everywhere. And we've all been crushed into the southern tip of Africa over a period of about 60 years. Now, the liberals of those days told the same lies as the liberals do now. There were those who said, oh, don't be such a pessimist. The blacks are going to do well. Give them a chance. They'll learn from their mistakes. Blah, blah, blah. All of those liberal assurances turned out to be rubbish. Here in South Africa, there is a concern about the number of whites being murdered here. Among the farmers, and we only had about 60,000 white farmers, but of the 60,000 white farmers, several thousand have already been murdered. And it wasn't always just murder. They were tortured before they were killed. Among whites, it's been calculated that in the last 20 years, about 70,000 whites have been murdered here in South Africa. There was even a campaign right at the end of apartheid South Africa when we were going to hand over power. And I remember a campaign that they called EGBOK, E-G-B-O-K. And EGBOK was on the radio and on the TV. And you know what EGBOK stood for? It stood for everything's going to be okay. Yep, everything's going to be okay. That's what the liberals told us then. And it was a lie, just like all the other liberal lies. During my own lifetime, the population of what was then Rhodesia, now Zimbabwe, the white population, dropped by more than 95%. The population used to be 250 to 300,000 whites. Now, there's less than 30,000 whites. In fact, that number of 30,000 is already about 7 years old. It may be even less. So in my lifetime, the white population of Zimbabwe has dropped by 90%. So as a white person living here in Africa and listening to these debates among whites in America, whites in Europe and in the UK who are fearing for their future, I've seen all that happen before. And Now you can see how millions of non-whites, Latinos, and all sorts of people are flooding into America. And the liberals are just granting them citizenship. I have come to regard a liberal, a white liberal, as the worst kind of enemy you can have. I regard them as traitors to the white race. I don't listen to a white liberal, because a white liberal is not working for the interests of whites. He's normally working for moneyed interests of his own. He will say anything because his bank account or the bank account of the person paying him is more important than your life. So I don't listen to liberals. But I know that liberals are pathological liars. They will lie in every conceivable way in order to get their way. And they will try and mock you and try and destroy your life, destroy your career. They are quite ruthless in that way. They will go to any length to destroy a so-called racist. But the truth is that they fear the racist, because for the liberal, this is really a big con job. And the nightmare for the liberal, the nightmare, is that enough whites will realize that the threat is real and that this threat has to be taken seriously and this thing has to be stopped, even using violence if need be. That is the liberals' real nightmare. So I take this whole issue of white majority countries becoming non-white majority countries seriously. The United States in 1950 was 90% white. In 30 or 40 years' time, whites will be less than 50%. I think whites in Europe, Britain, but especially America, have every right to fear the future. I also think that they should not be listening to these liberals, because I have seen the liberal track record myself, and I will tell you that a liberal is just lying in order to buy time. He's just trying to delay for as long as possible the moment of truth. And he's hoping that if he's clever enough about this business, that by the time you find out that he's wrong, it's already too late for you to save yourself. There was a Norwegian called Anders Breivik who in 2011 ran amok, and he engaged in a bombing and shooting spree, and he killed 77 people. But he wasn't just some homeless bum. He was actually quite an intelligent guy with an interesting history that showed that he'd started businesses, he'd done some work, he'd even written a 1,500-page document about Europe in the future and saving Europe for the white race. This guy was given 21 years in jail for what he did. That was the maximum penalty that they could give in Norway. So in Norway, we have a white man doing what a Boer did in the 1980s. And what happened in South Carolina may have been the first American, the first white American, who has done a similar thing. I don't see anything wrong with wanting to defend your race, with wanting to defend your existence. There is no crime in this. For decades, we've said it's okay for blacks to defend themselves. It's okay for non-whites to defend their existence and to fight oppression. Why is it wrong when a white man does it? If history shows us anything, looking back on our experiences in Africa, and perhaps even in America already, if history shows us anything, it is that whites are not overreacting. Whites are underreacting to a problem that can destroy them. The mass media, which is always hypocritical when it comes to race, Consider, for example, when blacks are committing crimes against whites. The news stories don't say black man. The only way that you might find out it's a black man is if they put up a picture of the perpetrator. But I noticed that with Dylan, there were news stories about white man, white man, white man. When blacks are busy killing whites, then the liberals don't want race to be mentioned. But when a white is killing blacks, then suddenly race is really important. In some of the media reports about Dylan, they mentioned that in the part of South Carolina where he lived, the whites made up only 10% of the population. So the non-whites were 90%. That puts him in the same position as a white person in South Africa. Here we make up 9% of the population. So Dylan is actually a minority in that part of America. He's already a minority. He doesn't have to wait for 20 or 30 years. He and others in that area are minorities now. The biggest problem all white people face everywhere is the guilt trip. This is the most successful anti-white weapon ever invented. The damage it does is worse than dropping several nuclear bombs. The guilt trip is killing the white race. Now in Rhodesia, the guilt trip was based on colonialism. Then when I moved to South Africa, the whites in South Africa said, no, they can't use the colonial card against us because we've been a republic since 1962. We're an independent state. Nobody can make us hand over power to the blacks. Well, they did it anyway. The international community, the liberals, the commies, they all came and they jumped on the Boers' case for several decades, and eventually the Boers ended up giving away their country. So despite all the freedoms given to blacks in America and the way things are in America, the guilt trip is still at work. Slavery, the Indians died. Whether they died deliberately or died from starvation or died from disease, it doesn't matter. It's all the white man's responsibility. The guilt trip is played on whites all the time. In my view, this is something which has to be thrown out of the window at the soonest possible moment. The guilt trip is going to kill the white race in its entirety. White people have to stop thinking in those terms. They need to start thinking in true terms of equality. What's good for a black man is good for a white man. If a black man feels oppressed and he needs to fight the system, then so must a white man. And a guy like Dylan is already a minority. Why can't he fight already? Why can't whites fight for America? America was created by whites anyway. The founding fathers were white. The Constitution was written by whites. Until the 1950s, it was 90% white. So why can't whites fight for America? They created it. The guilt trip is at work even in Europe. Can you believe it? White people have been living in Europe for 45,000 years. And yet the guilt trip is still at work over there. There they aren't told that they killed anybody. There they're just told that it's wrong for a society to be only white. They have to learn to be multicultural. They are told that this thing you've been doing for 45,000 years, it's all wrong. The fact, of course, that they invented most of science that exists and that they are the root of modern civilization, all of that's ignored. But you see, you're not debating with a normal person when you're dealing with a liberal or a Jew. These people have an agenda, and for them words are just a tool to play you with, and it's all about just fooling you. They're just playing a con job. This whole con is just to get white people to give up that which they created, that which is theirs. And it's a guilt trip that started in Africa. They started it back then, and the guilt trip has never stopped, because the guilt trip is such an effective weapon. Now, white people have to learn to combat this thing. They have to learn to resist this thing. They have to learn to start standing up for their own. Stop listening to all this guilt that's thrown at you. There is nothing wrong with believing in your race and in your nation and in what your forefathers did. Recently on the social media, I ran into a black from America who was telling me that according to his Afrocentric rubbish beliefs, that black people had a super civilization 8 million years ago, that black people invented everything, and the whole world owes blacks everything. Now, this is a nut job, but here's the interesting part. Nobody's calling that black guy a black supremacist. Nobody's saying that what he's saying is wrong. But the moment a white guy opens his mouth and says, you know what, white people did this or we did that, and we did it first, all of a sudden he's a supremacist and this is wrong. All of these things are just mind games. They are mind games to stop white people from acting in the way that nature intended us to act. Nature gave us the brain power, the willpower to survive. We have every right to exist. Nobody can tell us we have no right to exist. We have every right to fight for anything that is ours and to fight for our existence. So as far as I'm concerned, guys like Barend Strydom, guys like Breivik, and maybe even Dylan Roof, these guys may actually be the real heroes, because they were the first to stand up and to fight back. In reality, we should pray that there are 10 million more like them and that they all start fighting back.